Welcome to Toddler Toolkit.
Hi, parents. Today we are delving into pain in early infancy and how that can actually show up in the toddler years. And your toddler might have some difficulty with sensory issues or even attention, and how their stories when they were very little or born prematurely could really impact them in those toddler years. We're also going to look at the sensory processing disorder. What are some components of that? And then I'm also going to share my son Skylar's story of what happened to him when he was 2 weeks old. So the history of pain in early infancy, it might surprise some of us to hear this, but the way that we have managed pain in newborn infants has been historically inadequate, according to Porter, Wolf, and Miller in their groundbreaking study, despite clinicians acknowledging that infants can experience pain similarly to adults. That they said that their practices haven't always reflected this understanding. That was from Procedural Pain in Newborn Infants, the Influence of Intensity and Development. So pretty much what they're saying is the infants had certain procedures done, and they thought that maybe infants didn't feel the same level of pain, or they weren't giving them the same pain plan support through medication, right? So where does this really stem from? And research highlights in Science Daily from a study led by UCL researchers suggesting that preterm infants who haven't yet developed the mechanism to get accustomed to moderate pain could face developmental impacts from medical procedures experienced in the very first few weeks of life. So I think this is really what's calling it out, is preterm infants are more susceptible and they just have not developed being able to deal with that pain. And there's an impact that comes with it. So a baby that's born preterm has a lot better of a chance of not being as impacted by these early procedures. Now, some of these procedures that your toddler, or if you know anybody else with a baby who have maybe gone through, could be time in the NICU, being born early, premature. It could be IVs and tubes and heel lancing or surgery, biopsy. So yeah, there's a bunch of different factors that, and obviously you're not saying that we aren't grateful for the medical treatment and life-saving practices, because that's not really the point of this episode, is to say that we're not thankful or appreciative of that, because obviously we are. But it is to talk about there has been changes in practices with how early infants deal with pain and how they give treatment, because they used to not give anesthesia. They used to do other practices where the infants could feel more of the pain, and also kind of understanding there was a different thought process that had changed. So the authors of the new current biology paper say that if preterm infants have not yet developed the mechanism that enables people to get used to moderate pain, medical procedures in their first few weeks of life could really impact their development. And that was from Science Daily. That's from the study, preterm infants do not get used to repeated pain in the way that full-term infants do, or children or adults that habituate to pain. So they get used to it, that they come to expect it, but they're saying that the preterm infants might not, that are born early. And that was a study by the UCL, University College London. They also said their findings suggest that the ability to get used to repeated pain might develop during the third trimester of pregnancy. So that babies were born prematurely have not yet developed that ability the full-term babies have right from birth. So I think that's a really important aspect here, that there may be a susceptibility. So if you have had, if your toddler, when they were a baby, if they were born preterm, maybe they did have some NICU experience, or they had some other kind of operation, surgery, or biopsy, or something like that, and they went through something very early on, and you were seeing maybe some struggles with sensory issues, there could be a correlation there. So let's go ahead and dive deeper into this. I would like to share my son Skylar's story. So I have identical twins, Jace and Skylar. Skylar was born 4 pounds and Jace was born 5 pounds. Jace was the bigger baby. Skylar was baby B and the smaller baby. And they were born prematurely at 36 weeks and a few days old through C-section. We were there at the hospital for, I think, about 4 days. We left the hospital. We were home for what seemed to be like a week. And then we were right back in the hospital. And what happened was I was watching this video about how baby massage can really help your baby with digestion and just help them regulate. So I was watching this video, and on the video, the lady was talking about how you could rub your infant's feet very gently and how they like that. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll try that. I'm going to do like a little baby massage. So I was doing that. I was rubbing Skylar's feet. And because I did that, I noticed there was something wrong with his ankle. It was swollen. And I was like, okay, well, that's funny. I don't remember that being there before. And I'm so glad that I did this little baby massage, because I think I could have missed it if I hadn't of. And I am very grateful for that video, because if it wasn't for that, yeah, I could have missed it. It could have went untreated for a longer amount of time. I don't know how long it would have taken me to realize it. So what happened was, you know, I called the on-call nurse and got help through the phone support. And she said, well, what you're describing to me, because he's so young, you just need to take him in. So we took him to the urgent care, and they're like, okay, he is like premature. He is like literally newborn right out of the oven. You need to take him to the hospital. So we were back at the hospital. And because it was during COVID, Jace could not stay with us. Unfortunately, family members were not allowed to stay. Only me and my husband were allowed to stay, but no siblings. That was very unfortunate. So Jace had to spend a week at my parents' house, and my husband drove home from the hospital at night, stayed up with Jace all night. And then I was with Skylar full time, and I just couldn't leave his side because, you know, he was not doing well. They did an x-ray. As soon as we got there, they did an x-ray, and it was like being on an episode of House. They're like, there's an infection in all of his bones. And we were thinking worst case scenario, because they didn't want to tell us what that meant. They said, well, we don't want to really tell you because we don't know for sure. We need to do an ultra scan to make sure. We had to wait 24 hours for that ultra scan to happen. And, you know, we were thinking, does this mean he only has a few weeks to live? Does this mean he's going to grow up with a disability? You know, what does this mean? Like, we don't even know what infection in all of his bones mean. And the last thing I wanted to do is Google that. So the 24 hours were torture. And we were so grateful because the ultrasound did not show the infection. They actually could not explain why that was. They said the next best step is to do the biopsy. So they were going to put him under anesthesia, do about an hour under for operation to find out what the infection was. So then I just remember sitting in that waiting room, just feeling like nothing was real. And I just wanted to see Skylar again, and just like waiting for that. When he came out, he was just so pale, and he really struggled. It seemed like since that point on, and a few days after, he was really struggling keeping his temperature up. The nurses kept unwrapping him from his blankets and his swaddle to get his temperature, and his temperature kept dropping. And they're like, you need to keep his temperature up. But then they kept unswaddling him. It was very frustrating. But I know that I'm still very grateful for the care, and some of the nurses were very helpful as well. So one nurse recommended for me to do skin to skin because he was just so pale and he was so cold and he just didn't seem like he was doing well at all. The skin to skin really helped. So yeah, that whole experience was really tough. So we were there about a week, and then he still has the scar on his ankle. He probably always will have a scar on his ankle from that. It wasn't just, though, that early experience, because before I was talking about, you know, procedures, pain in premature babies in very early infancy. Like, and this was literally the second week of his life, which would place him somewhere around 38 weeks. It wasn't just that procedure itself. It was all the follow-up procedures that came with it. Not really procedures, but follow-up appointments. He had a lot of follow-up appointments, a lot of lancing, heel lancing, blood work, where they took multiple vials of blood from him, just a lot of doctor appointments. They already had a lot of doctor appointments already because they were premature twins, but then they had even more because of his staph infection. So, and I don't even know if I shared that, but what they found out was he had a staph infection. And I will talk more about staph infection awareness in a little bit. But he just had a lot of follow-up appointments and a lot more pain that went with that. And I do think that affected him, shaped him now. You know, I do see there is, you know, I can't prove it, but I can definitely see there's a connection for sure. And I just remember like this one time, this nurse took like 4 vials of blood from his heel and he was just screaming bloody murder. And it was the follow-up appointment that the doctor said they had lost all the vials. They lost the vials and they couldn't read his blood work. And the point was they were just making sure like all his numbers, his levels were good and the staph infection was gone. And they had lost the blood work. Yep. So all sorts of interesting experiences there, but however, still very grateful for all the support. And, you know, Skylar was admitted to the high infectious disease branch of a hospital. And when you are, there's a lot of follow-ups. There's a lot of parts to that. So studies do show that there were referenced in the journal Pediatric Psychology and other research shown that early pain experiences can alter how children process pain and stress, potentially leading to heightened sensitivity or even sensory processing disorder, SPD, later on. Skylar, now being a toddler, shows signs that align with these findings somewhat. I think he is definitely startled by loud noises like car alarms, and where his brother might be concerned and not like it, his is on a greater level. It's panic. It's fright. Flight. He is shaken. He's also uncomfortable with overwhelming stimuli like the bounce houses. And like, you know, we have a bounce house, Jace will go in it and we've done it repeated times and Skylar will just not go in it. Skylar's also stressed out by the elevator, just anything that is new, different, or that's a loud sound. He needs a lot of extra reassurance in his environment. And I think it's more than, at first I was thinking maybe this is just kind of like his personality, but I really think the more he gets a little bit older, the more I'm seeing this connection, because we really didn't see this when he was a baby. But now that he's almost 3, I'm seeing this more and more. And there's definitely, you know, like I said, while I can't prove that this is 100% the cause, I can say that there is definitely seems to appear to be some connection that stems to those very first few weeks of life with his staph infection, the biopsy, and all those follow-up appointments where he had the heel lancing and such. I also wanted to say, like, yeah, just a few weeks ago, the hand dryer in a bathroom totally scared Skylar as well. And it's just like on another level that he gets so fearful. And his brother is so very opposite, is like a daredevil. So I think that makes them seem even more so different in that way. Does your toddler have aggressive behavior? Does your toddler push buttons? Can your toddler not control themselves? And does your toddler almost seem to enjoy when you tell them no and do it more? Then sign up for the Transform Aggressive Behavior to a Calm, Kind, and Caring Toddler workshop waitlist. The link is in the show notes, and I am happy to support those families that are dealing with this. I know this is not everybody. This is a unique situation that some of us might have, but even if you don't have a toddler this to this extent, but maybe there's little pieces that you were resonating with, and you maybe see just a little bit of this, or maybe you're concerned that your child will take on more of these actions, more of these button pushing reactions as they get a little bit older, closer to 3, maybe 4, and you're concerned about that, then this workshop will be really helpful to you as well. let's talk about sensory processing disorder. So if any of these things resonate with your toddler, first of all, I'm not a doctor and I'm not diagnosing. I am just reading some of the reactions that children with SPD have. So they could have strong reactions to pain, touch, temperature, and sound. So aversion to certain clothing types or textures, difficulty transitioning between activities, difficulty falling asleep, being easily distracted by loud sounds, screaming when touched, recoiling from certain textures or food, seeming unresponsive to things around them. Some other signs of SPD include common sounds may be painful or overwhelming. The light touch of a shirt may chafe the skin. The sound of a leaf blower outside the window may cause vomiting or diving under the table. Reactions to loud noises or bright lights, complaining that their clothes are uncomfortable, clumsiness, trouble with fine motor skills like fastening buttons, and extreme behaviors. So when I look at SPD, the sensory processing disorder, I would say the Skylar has none of those mostly, not to that extent, not to that extreme. And we're going to talk a little bit about why that could be. But what I do notice that is a little bit more extreme, but doesn't exactly fit any of those criteria. And like I said, I'm not a doctor again, but he does get very distressed waking up from his naps at times. That's not me waking up. That's when he wakes up on his own or his brother wakes him up. He could have a 50-minute tantrum and just inconsolable, so upset. If he accidentally woke up between a sleep cycle, the same thing. In another episode, when I talked about screens, toddlers, and technology, and I talked about how when our TV broke, Skylar no longer had the TV to pacify him after he woke up from his nap. Before it was pacifying, and when that broke and we didn't have it, he went through a really hard tantrum time. But he actually has worked through it and now can wake up and transition without a tantrum. But it took time to work through. It took a few weeks. But that is just something that I have noticed about him. He did have that kind of extreme distress to waking up at one point. He also wants his hands wiped. Like if he's eating something, he wants his hands cleaned or wiped in between eating foods. He always wants to make sure his hands are not dirty, his surroundings are not dirty, and everything is organized and where they should be. If Jace knocked the pillow off the couch, he wants me to put the pillow back on the couch because it doesn't go on the floor. And if things or toys that have on-off switches are not turned off, he always makes sure they're turned off. So if they're playing with like an activity table or like an activity book and Jace, his brother, did not turn it off, he will go and turn it off for him, making sure it is always turned off. And it does make me think like, oh yeah, maybe he has like some sense of control that he wants over his environment, which could make sense because he didn't have control over some of those really early infancy situations that he was put in. Not only to mention, when he was around 16 months, he had a fractured tibia bone in his leg, which was also painful, and he had to have a cast. So yeah, he's had some painful experiences, and that could have definitely shaped him. Now on that SPD scale, sensory processing disorder, I will say he does have that reaction to the loud noises for sure. It's pure panic and flight and fear. And he is more clumsy than his brother. He's always running into stuff and hurting himself, which could be linked to attention, which we are going to talk a little bit about attention in a second. So if you feel like any of this sounds like your toddler or maybe just little aspects and you could relate to, let's look at toddler temperament and early childhood pain. So the research tells us that early pain doesn't just disappear. It can change the way toddlers interact with their world. They might be more sensitive to stress, find certain sensory inputs overwhelming, or need more support navigating their environment. The study, Effects of Neonatal Pain and Temperament on Attention Problems in Toddlers Born Preterm in the Journal of Pediatric Psychology, Oxford Academic, that study explored the link between neonatal pain, temperament, and attention problems in toddlers. So that's the attention piece, also temperament supportant as well. Let's look at temperament. So the study looked for specific aspects of temperament called effortful control in toddlers. Effortful control refers to toddlers' ability to manage their attention, focus, and emotions The research found that toddlers with lower effortful control were more likely to have attention problems, especially if they also experience high levels of neonatal pain-related stress. Okay, there's that attention piece, the temperament. Also, there could be some nervous system changes. Studies indicate that repeated pain in newborns can lead to changes in nervous system, particularly the processing pathways. This can make them more sensitive to pain in general, with a lower threshold for experiencing discomfort. Also, heightened stress response. Exposure to pain in infancy can also heighten a child's sensitivity to stress. This can manifest as increased sensitivity to stimuli like loud noises. So that was Skylar, right? Bright lights or even certain textures or smells. So, you know, Skylar doesn't like when his hands are not clean, and he doesn't like when things are not clean or messy. Additional factors are types of duration of pain. The severity of these effects might depend on the type and duration of the pain that was experienced in infancy. For example, chronic pain from a medical condition might have a more significant impact than a brief procedural pain. So if we're using my son Skylar in his story, for example, yeah, his was not chronic. It was a procedural. There were a bunch of follow-up appointments which had repeated painful moments to them, but it was not chronic. And that is probably also why when we look at all of the components of sensory processing disorder, he doesn't really fit a lot of those characteristics. And a child who had more chronic experiences as an infant may be more likely to fit those characteristics. Also, individual differences. Children have varying levels of baseline sensitivity. Some may be more susceptible to developing heightened sensitivities after pain experiences compared to others. So each child is individual and has a different tolerance and baseline. There is also a link of early pain and trauma. So research by Bessel van der Kolk, an authority on psychological trauma, did link childhood trauma experiences to changes in the brain, especially hormonal functions crucial to regulation, heightened states of arousal, and memory formation in the hippocampus and damage to areas in the brain involving memory. So some of these alterations can make learning, memory retention, and information processing challenging, and it even could affect their REM sleep, which also helps memory as well. Also, there was a correlation from research conducted by Stoddard at the Shriners Hospital for Children in Boston that said that children who gone through severe burns and the related medical treatments, the long hospitalization, the repeated dressing changes, also they had an elevated risk to PTSD-like symptoms, all stemming from really early in life. So before we put this all together and wrap up, I just wanted to do a quick staph infection awareness. That's because Skylar had staph at 2 weeks old. He had a staph infection. So I wanted to let you know a little bit about it. So if you have a friend or know somebody having a baby, or if you plan to, you just know to look out for the signs, because the earlier you catch it, the better. So staph infections, particularly those caused by the Staphylococcus bacteria, pose a significant health risk to newborns, potentially leading to severe and life-threatening conditions if not promptly and effectively treated. These infections can result in critical health issues to newborns, like brain damage, developmental disabilities, and even conditions like cerebral palsy. If they're left untreated, it can lead to sepsis, where it goes into the bloodstream, affects the brain and the spinal cord, resulting in meningitis. The treatment for such infections involves usually antibiotics. So yeah, Skylar was treated by antibiotics after they did the biopsy. And the fact we found it so early, the doctor said it would have been way worse and way less treatable if we waited. And the fact that we went in pretty much could have saved his life. So newborns, especially those with weakened immune systems like premature, low birth weight babies, those who undergo invasive medical procedures or have prolonged stays in neonatal intensive care's NICUs, have increased risks for developing staph infections. So that's why it's so important to raise awareness about them. Also, infections can be acquired from various sources, but some of them also could be from the hospital environment, including medical equipment. And it's really important that staff have good hygiene practices, because infections can also spread through that way. And we need to make sure we have clean medical procedures and hand washing and hygiene. And we also need to make sure we have proper and prompt treatment as well. So I don't share this, putting this all together, I don't just share this to make us feel bad that if our premature baby was in the NICU or had a procedure or had a staph infection, it's not to put guilt on the parent. It is to give tools to the parent so we can empower ourselves. It means we understand our child's needs, offering the extra layer of understanding and support that they might require. So the insights of today's episode is to raise awareness, but also to know that if our toddler is struggling with some things in toddlerhood, and you know maybe they went through a few things in very early infancy and they fit that we can help support them better. That we can help support them through some issues they have and come from a place of compassion and understanding and help them with their unique challenges and needs. And I think it's important that these studies, you know, they don't define our parenting, they don't define our children. What matters, again, is that understanding, support that we're providing our children and ourselves along our parenting journey. I hope you found this episode helpful. Maybe you learned something new. Maybe you got a new perspective. If you are concerned about your toddler, please reach out to your pediatrician. They can support you more, especially if you are concerned about any sensory type issues as well. All right. Thank you, parents. I will talk to you in the next episode.
And that wraps up another episode filled with tools and insights to help your parenting journey have clarity and ease. Remember, every child is unique, and so is our experience, especially when there's more than one. Keep celebrating those small victories and learning along the way. I'm Heather, your Twin Mama Guide, and until next time, here's to raising skilled, self-regulated toddlers who listen, learn, and love. Take care and see you soon.